no oversight board and has not been transparent in reporting officer-involved shootings. Last year, the Capitol Police shot three people in a six-week period, including Jalen Lewis, an unarmed 25-year-old black man and father of two. His mother, Arkella Lewis, testified at a public hearing this week against expanding the Jackson Capitol Police powers as she explained what happened to her son.
They then suddenly noticed that a white man was standing outside of the window with his gun drawn. He did not ask Jalen for any information. He did not tell Jalen who he was. Before they could do anything, the man shot Jalen in the head through the window. I've been doing everything I can to try to get information about what has happened. But Capitol Police and the NBI have not even contacted me, providing me no information. Nobody cam footage, no dash cam footage, no police report or autopsy report, not even a phone call to acknowledge his death.
For more, we go to Jackson, Mississippi, where we're joined by two guests. Makani Temba is a volunteer with the Jackson Undivided Coalition, chief strategist at Higher Ground Change Strategies. She writes about this bill in her piece for The Nation, headlined Apartheid American Style. Also with us, the mayor of Jackson, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, who's accused state lawmakers of trying to colonize Jackson. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Mayor Jackson, Mayor Lumumba. Please start off by explaining what these bills are about.
Well, Amy, simply put, these bills are an attack on black leadership, a way to seize power of a majority black city, which cannot be seized democratically through an election. And so state lawmakers are attempting to legislate their way into control of the city. This bill is part and parcel of a larger effort which not only attempts to take over the judicial process, but also we've seen efforts to take over our water system. Now that we've received over nearly $800 million in federal funding to contribute towards its repair, former efforts to not only take over our school district, but also to take over our airport. And so this is what we're seeing not only in Jackson, but in less obvious ways, there are efforts around the country to do that. I've talked to colleagues or comrades of mine in St. Louis and Mayor Tashara Jones, and I know a similar effort is afoot in Kansas City, Missouri. And so it is apartheid, as we have called it. It is plantation politics, and there it is used under the Trojan horse of public safety. First and foremost, a statistical analysis has determined that Jackson may not even have the highest crime rate in the state of Mississippi when you get into it by scale. But beyond that, if there's a true emphasis or concern over the issues of public safety, then the state could make investments in areas where we've asked them to. First and foremost, their own state crime lab has a backlog that prevents cases from going forward to trial. And justice delayed is justice denied, as we have known it to be. They have not supported the request of our police department and ballistic technology that helps them associate guns involved in other crimes. They haven't supported our real-time command center that we've asked them, which is a 21st century tool used to support that. Nor have they supported our efforts of credible messenger or violence interruption training. We've gone to Wells Fargo Bank and National League of Cities, who have actually been the ones to give us seed money so that we can make sure that we have additional interventions towards the issues of crime. Lastly, I will say that when you do a truly intensive study of what the crimes or the violence in Jackson persist of, you find that it is largely based on interpersonal conflict, which is very difficult to police. And so simply having an occupying force that abuses community does not make us any safer. Over the last 6 months, there have actually been at least seven officer-involved incidents for the Capitol Complex Police. And not only JPD, but the surrounding jurisdictions over the last 2 to 3 years have not amounted to that number of officer-involved incidents.
This reminds me so much of what happened in Michigan when the governor, the white Republican governor at the time, appointed emergency managers, especially for black cities. And of course, we know what happened in Flint with the water supply being disconnected and being wholly contaminated. The governor there was Rick Snyder. Can you clarify what you just said about you think this started with the water supply of Jackson, which has been so problematic, and now getting this influx of state and federal money that the state wants to grab the money?
Yeah, well, it started even before that. The first effort or obvious effort would have been over the takeover of our airport, which we have been fighting for the better part of 5 to 6 years now. But with respect to our water system, we have had decades of deferred maintenance and neglect. You know, this is an area where I have to give my predecessors their just due, in that they have all asked for resources in order to help with Jackson's water system and the issues of capital improvement. We have nearly 50% loss in our system, among other capital investments that have to be made. And so as we have gone to the state legislature each and every year asking for support and saying that it's not a matter of if, but a matter of when these things will fail, they have displayed a deliberate indifference or willful neglect of the city of Jackson. And so we had to go through extraordinary means to go through the federal government and working with the EPA and giving credit where it is due. The Biden administration provided collectively nearly $800 million, which now we have a third-party administrator that we're working in conjunction with through a agreed order to make certain that we can see the prioritization and sustainability of our system. And now that we have found ways to solve our problems for ourselves, the state has taken a negative outlook on that. And this all comes on the heels of our ability to get those resources, where they not only attacked the effort to take over our water system, but you see simultaneously an effort to take over our judicial process. And so it's not just attack on the city of Jackson. It's an attack on the black judges in Hinds County. It's an attack on the black prosecutor. It's simply stating that they want to seize control over all of the points of governance that we now have control over. And I would lastly say that Trey Lamar, the representative who initiated or introduced the bill, when asked why he believed that these judges should be appointed rather than elected, his response was, we simply want the best and the brightest. That feeds into the notion, to the false narrative of black people being inferior and incapable of choosing the leadership which best represents their interests.
I wanted to bring Makani Temba into this conversation, volunteer with Jackson Undivided Coalition, wrote a great piece in The Nation. Can you talk about the historical significance of Jackson, and particularly go back to Mississippi went from having one of the most radical changes, you point out, after the Civil War with a black majority legislature to what we're seeing today with a white majority, white supermajority running the state. And what comes of that?
Well, good morning and thank you. You know, the history is really important. And one of the reasons why Mississippi had such a progressive constitution and legislature during Reconstruction was that there wasn't the kind of interference by the white power structure that sort of came out of slavery, because Mississippi has a sort of history of having a relationship with its residents that's more extraction. There's no pretense around whether they're here for the benefit of the residents of the state. So there's the attack against Jackson as a black city and Jackson, which has been a battleground since Reconstruction, really, around who controls it. And it wasn't until the federal government post-Reconstruction that led up to the sort of shift in 1890 with a different constitution that was sort of grounded and rooted in white supremacy. It was the federal government actually that provided arms for the Confederacy to recapture the state. And it was a bloody battle, much of which took place in in Jackson and Madison for the control of the state and who would do it. And it's really only been, sort of the bad reapportionment, racist lines, packing districts. The only way that they are able to rule as a white supermajority is really about illegal, unjust tactics that they've created law around, but they're really not just. They're really not providing the folks of Mississippi true representation. We would never have a Republican supermajority if there was, accurate black representation by state districts. That said, the other issue that we're dealing with that's sort of part of the legacy of this relationship of extraction to the people of Mississippi from its legislators, and I should say it's predominantly white legislature that we've had since 1890, has been the way in which and this is in many ways a federal issue. Because of states' rights, states are not really accountable to making sure that they spend the dollars they receive on need. So a place like Jackson that has a lot of need around infrastructure because of the lack of investment by the state, and really not only divestment and lack of investment and neglect, but also literally creating barriers for the expenditures of money that are directed to the state. To the city. Jackson was the only city in the state that had an extra layer of rules and approvals, the only city in the state, for how it would spend its federal dollars that were allocated directly. And the state has no accountability when they write these proposals and talk about, we need money because of X, this, and this thing. Oftentimes they're talking about incidents and issues that are in black cities and black towns, but they have no accountability to spend that money that way. And in fact, the legislation that seeks to create the so-called regional water authority to take Jackson out of the picture in terms of control over its resources does not even require that authority to fix the problem. It only requires that authority to receive the dollars and spend the dollars, which is very different.
I want to end with Mayor Lumumba. You can tell us if you're going to be running for governor, but that was just a slip of the tongue there. What do you demand of the governor of Mississippi, Tate Reeves, and also the president of the United States, Joe Biden?
We demand equity. We demand fair representation. We demand the ability to govern for ourselves and have home rule. My principal aim in my leadership, one that I personally subscribe to in my life, is one centered around self-determination. And so we want to democratize power in our city. And so while we are trying to make efforts to build a vision of public safety, which is rooted in a foundation of community trust. These efforts of this CCID bill set to roll that back, set to create a more adverse relationship between law enforcement and our police department, one which is reflective of what we see around the nation. While I certainly would not report to you that the Jackson Police Department is perfect, I will say that we are aiming and making strides towards making sure that it is more consistent with the relationship that I just shared with you and that we're trying to build. And so we simply don't want to see that government interference that Makani was speaking of. We simply don't want to see federal funds diverted away from Jackson, which has systematically been the practice in Mississippi for some time. In fact, the governor even boasted when at his time as Secretary of State, how he was able, not Secretary of State, State Auditor, how he was able to divert funding from the city of Jackson and was proud of that. And so we're just aiming to get our fair share and no longer be under the thumb of the state of Mississippi.
Well, we want to thank you both for being with us, the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, Chokwe Antar Lumumba, and Makani Temba of the Jackson Undivided Coalition. We'll link to your piece in The Nation, Apartheid American Style. Next up, we stay in the South. We go to Atlanta and the fight to stop Cop City. 23 more protesters have been charged with domestic terrorism. Stay with us. Brixton by The Clash. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we go to Atlanta, where prosecutors have charged another 23 forest defenders with domestic terrorism after their arrest late Sunday at a festival near the site of Cop City, a massive police training facility being built in the Willani Forest. The arrests followed clashes between police and protesters Sunday afternoon. This comes less than 2 months after Atlanta police shot and killed Manuel Esteran, a 26-year-old environmental defender who also went by the name Tortuguita. Earlier this week, organizers with the Faith Coalition to Stop Cop City gathered to condemn the plans to build Cop City and the police department's crackdown on protesters. This is Reverend Kiana Jones.
The reality of it is that the ones who are engaging in violence are the police, and they're from right here in Atlanta, Georgia. You got APD, you got Georgia State Police, you got GBI, you got Georgia State Troopers, you got everybody except the MARTA police, who are engaging in violence and terrorism against the people who are standing against this illegal land swap.
On Wednesday, a group of Muskogee Creek activists interrupted a regional commission meeting and attempted to give an eviction notice to the Atlanta mayor.
Objection! Objection! We have a letter being delivered from the Muskogee Creek Nation on behalf of Muskogee Creek spiritual leadership in opposition to Cop City.
I came all the way on the Trail of Tears to deliver this letter to you folks. We want you to know that the contemporary Muskogee people are now making their journey back to our homelands, and hereby give notice to Mayor Andrew Dickens, the Atlanta City Council, the Atlanta Police Department, the Atlanta Police Foundation, the DeKalb County Sheriff's Office, and so-called Cop City, that you must immediately vacate Muskogee homelands and cease violence and policing of indigenous and black people in Muskogee lands. We also ask for an independent investigation into the assassination of our relative Tortuguita, and that the charges be dropped against Willani Forest defenders.
To talk more about the growing movement to fight Cop City in Atlanta, we're joined by two guests, Micah Herskins, local community organizer in Atlanta, Georgia, and Kamau Franklin, as founder of the organization Community Movement Builders. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Kamau, let's begin with you. Talk about what happened this weekend. I mean, in the national media, it's that basically, domestic terrorists attack the police, and so many of them were arrested.
Yeah, I mean, the national media is basically forwarding or believing or putting out the media and narrative of the police themselves. Nothing could be further from the truth. What we had over the weekend was a festival in Willani Park with hundreds of people gathered to denounce Cop City, to celebrate the Willani Force. There was a breakaway action in which there was civil disobedience, and there was an attempt to disable property. The police overreacted, came in, chased people down. They then decided to go a mile away and invade the music festival. They broke up the entire festival. They threatened people's lives. They threw people to the ground. They arrested people randomly and indiscriminately. And as you stated, we now have 23 more cases of domestic terrorism filed. We had a total of 35 arrests at that rally and demonstration. And they continue to put out a narrative to scare people and to criminalize the larger movement to stop Cop City.
I want to go to a forest defender who was at the Peaceful Action and Concert Sunday. They sent this to us, the audio, describing what happened that night, asking to remain anonymous. Their voice has been distorted for their safety.
When police rolled armored vehicles onto the field and approached the music festival group, brought out riot shields, everyone stood together and demanded that we be let go, to go home, and only if we went all together. And the police were forced to let that happen. And it was really scary and disheartening. People were afraid for their lives after Perdiquito was killed in these woods, after the violence that the police were showing. They were charging people earlier in the night and threatening to tase them. And then when people stood together and kept each other safe, it was so beautiful. It felt like a punishment for standing up, for exerting our First Amendment rights, for showing a united front to the power structure of the city. And it felt really scary, like that it's possible that we're watching the future of protest for our future, protest against police brutality, protest against climate change. We're seeing it crush right here in front of our eyes.
Again, that is a forest defender who we're not identifying. But Micah Herskin, can you talk about the history of the Stop Cop City, as it's known, movement?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a movement that goes back years now, when the proposal to build Cop City and to destroy up to 380 acres of forest land first went public back in 2021, there was immediately a really broad community coalition that formed, against Cop City. People were canvassing neighborhoods, petitioning, flyering, showing up at city council on the day of the final vote, where city council voted to approve Cop City. There were 17 hours of public comment from just local community members saying, you know, we do not want this facility to be built. We need this forest land. It's critical for our communities. It's critical environmental protection. And of course, the city council approved it anyway. And since then, the movement has continued, and it's only grown, especially in the last year, as police have escalated their tactics, escalated their raids and their violence. Support has, come in from all over the country of people who recognize that this is absolutely an Atlanta issue, but it's also an issue that's going to impact people across the country and across the world.
Kamau Franklin, has there been any update on the police killing of the forest defender known as Tortuguita? His mother came up from Central America. What has happened, and what has the further investigation found?
Well, so far, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation has stonewalled releasing further evidence about what happened that day. The family is persisting. They've hired attorneys. They've gotten the release of several videotapes. But other than that, the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, which, has no real legitimate authority or right to investigate this violent crime by the police because they were part of it. And so we think that is why an independent investigation is needed. The information that has been released so far backs up completely the claim that organizers and activists and forest defenders have made. One, that the police gave no warning. There's no videotape whatsoever of the surrounding scenes in which you can hear any warning by the police. Two, the police claimed that there was one shot given, one shot by Twitagita, and then there was a return of fire. The blast of fire that you can hear on the videotape that was released, a body camera imagery of officers away from the scene, was a burst of fire. And they themselves commented that it sounded like suppressed fire, which is code word for police fire. So we continue to protest, to demand an independent investigation that has nothing to do with the authorities who were involved in the murder of Twitagita, because we think that's the only way we're going to find out the truth about what took place.
I want to go to Reverend Kiana Jones, who we referenced earlier, a member of the Faith Coalition to Stop Cop City, speaking at an Atlanta City Council meeting Monday.
What will your legacy be, you so-called legacies of black misleadership sitting up here on this council? Let me tell you something. Representation is not enough when you don't represent the people who elected you. The people came out and spoke clearly. And let me go to the Bible one more again and say that we are here as clergy to cry loud and spare not. We are opening our mouths and crying with a loud voice to say that we don't want Cop City. I live in East Atlanta. I don't want Cop City. I got 5 black children. I don't want Cop City. I like breathing clean air. I don't want Cop City. I want to drink clean water. I don't want Cop City. I don't want Black Hawk helicopters landing around the corner from my house. I don't want Cop City. I don't. My neighbors don't. My granny don't. She's been in her house almost 50 years, and you suckers will never get it through gentrification because we knew what to do.
So, again, that's Reverend Kiana Jones, a member of the Faith Coalition to Stop Cop City. There's also the environmentalists who want to preserve the forest, their indigenous people, the Muskogee as well. And you have those who are deeply concerned about police misconduct. This, Kamau, this facility, this police training facility, would be the largest in the country. And has any part of it been built? Do you really see yourself stopping this?
Well, the struggle continues. No part of it has been built. They've cleared off some forest land, and they've gated off certain parts of the area. But to this stage, 2 years later, nothing has been built. And that's because of the fortitude, the diversity of that movement, the tactics, the tactical diversity, the strategic diversity, the fact that we continue to press forward, even when the mayor of Atlanta, unlike the mayor of Jackson, the mayor of Atlanta, who teams up with the right-wing white supremacist governor of Georgia to suppress organizers and activists in the city and to work with the governor to give state terrorism charges. We have a weak mayor, we have a weak city council that gives into right-wing demands. But that does not, again, stop this movement from moving forward. We are going to continue to press to stop Cop City. We're going to continue to try to bring economic pain to Atlanta by doing what we can to stop the Democratic National Convention from convening in Atlanta. And Atlanta is also attempting to get the FIFA World Cup there. We're going to do everything within our power to let them know that if they come to Atlanta, they will be protested against.
Micah Herskin, today is the National Day of Action Against Police Terror. Can you talk about the actions that are planned today?
Yeah, absolutely. So, there's been actions planned all throughout the week. Today, one of the actions is going to culminate in a rally at the King Center, where folks will be coming out from all over, again, to say, you know, the community is not in support of Cop City, despite the city's messaging that, you know, the entire movement is actually made up of outside agitators, which is a trope that's been used, you know, since the Civil Rights Movement and before to discredit movements. This is people in Atlanta who have been, you know, crying out for years now that, you know, we do not want Cop City. And so, you know, this is just another show of community support and a community opposition to this facility. And you know, I know Kamau's been a part of planning that event. I don't know if you
want to. And Kamau Franklin, do you want to comment?
Not only are we doing actions here in Atlanta, but today's actually a National Day Against Police Violence. People can go to nationaldayofaction.info to see that there is a list of over 20 cities that are going to be doing everything from banner drops to civil disobedience to teach-ins to direct action to rallies and demonstrations. We must use this time to revive the national movement to stop police violence and police terror. We can no longer rely on, for those who have, the Democrats or policymakers to make changes for us. We have to get back out there in the streets and demand not only our rights, but stop the police violence against our communities.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Kamau Franklin, founder of Community Movement Builders, and Micah Herskin, Atlanta community organizer. And we'll link to your piece in Prism. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Kirk, Dina Gusta, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresa, Natami Warren, of Turin and Dura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
From March 6th to March 10th, Art Week is happening at SFU Combo Mall. Each day, a different event will be running, so you could enjoy arts and science for the entire week. The Faculty of Art and Social Science Department Student Union presents the week event. This is a good opportunity to meet with the past students. The event week is happening from March 6th to March 10th at SFU Combo Mall. For more information, visit the SFU event page.